This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Well, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck, wasn't it?
Lismarck.
Lismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bin. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you think.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place de la Nación! Welcome to another great episode of the... Hey.
You promised I could do it the last time I was here.
And I'm just so used to it. It's been... You know, you stopped doing it at, like, episode 8. I've been doing it since, so...
Pretty much.
Anyway, Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and with me, next to me, hand in hand, leg to leg, root beer to root beer, is my PSC Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode... I'm going to screen up, but I bet you I'm right. 379 of Place to Be.
I don't know. It's 378. Oh, you're off. That's it. You're all out of sync.
All out of sync. Welcome to episode 378 of the Mothership.
Yes.
This is our big weekend.
It is St. Mary's weekend, just starting, so you're not going to hear this until Monday night. But we are recording this on Friday evening. We just went to the St. Mary's Feast. We just had some sausage and peppers, some Dell's lemonade, and now we're sharing, well, not sharing, we're just having a Not Your Father's Root Beer, which is delicious.
Incredibly delicious.
So if you start to hear some slurring, some Ric Flair-level commentary later in the show, you'll know why. But... we are staying inside the Vintage Vault, so this is the you're listening to history, because for the first time ever, we are doing a Vintage Vault while present in the same room. This has never happened before.
Yeah, so. It's actually a Vintage Vault, a live episode, we're actually going to be paying attention and doing real things.
Right,
Instead of watching. If we look back, I believe we were almost going to do No Holds Barred tonight, I remember. We had a couple of other ideas, too, but we figured,
Well, part
give
of it too.
Off.
Yeah, give us Monday. On Monday, we got a lot going on. Yeah. Just the fallout from the weekend. So
exactly,
figure we bang it out tonight, and we'll dive deep inside the
big steel box.
Hey! What is going on here?
I let our friend from across the pond, Super Bulldog, there that he was driving the car today. So he's actually sleeping in the other room. I think he had 11 root beers before we left. So.
Real root beer, like A&W or Mug, Ramblin'.
Dr. Brown.
Ramblin' root beer.
Wow. I wonder if they still make Ramblin'.
I don't know.
I don't think so either.
That was a big one. My dad always bought Ramblin'.
Oh, it's good stuff. You know what I saw the other day? You see this when you worked at Stop and Shop, but for the first time I was at Cracker Barrel, and I saw a six-pack of sarsaparilla.
Sarsaparilla, huh?
Sarsaparilla. it's like the clear birch beer root beer.
Yeah, people would buy it. When I was a Stop and Shop. I remember people coming through with sarsaparilla. Mm. And now I only hear about sarsaparilla on Sheriff Callie's Wild West on the Disney Channel.
There you go.
All right. Set us up, and then we'll go through the Sutton notes of fun here.
Let's tonight, in the Big Steel Box, we bring you Survivor Series 2004. Interesting show. Because again, JR, it seems like as you and I have been going through 2004 calendar year, I feel like our opinions have changed on a lot of shows.
Mm.
Some still suck. Others have been, in fact, we're watching a fantastic moment in the history of this show right now on the here in the man cave. We'll talk about it in a moment, but yeah, I feel like we've switched things up and have kind of changed our opinions a bit. I don't know about this show. We'll have to see. November 14th, 2004. Live from the Gund Arena in Cleveland, Ohio. Do you remember, JR, the last time we were in Cleveland?
I want to say SummerSlam 96, but probably not that far back.
God, no. Invasion.
Oh, that's right. That was
it. But even before that, I believe No Mercy 99.
All right, that sounds right.
So, yeah. But Invasion 01.
SummerSlam 96 was the first event in the Gund Arena.
In the Gund Arena, yes. But no, the last time we were here was... Invasion 01 in July 2001. Your attendance, 7,500, which is pretty hideous, to be quite honest with you. Your buy rate, 0.59, which is even more hideous. And your announcers, everybody at ringside. No one's out in the catacombs. The Red Brand, the voices of Raw, good old J.R. Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, are at ringside, J.R., for the first time in quite a while. And the voices of SmackDown, Michael Cole and Taz. And the Spanish table as well, Hugo and Carlos. All right. We have a gigantic, according to him, Sutton report, so dive right in.
Do you remember the song for this evening? Even though you're looking right at my computer, it was just on the screen.
It was
screen.
Just on the screen. But it's funny, I forgot the name of I'm not looking at your screen. I forgot the name of the song. I know the band was the X's.
Ugly by the X's.
Yes. I remember that song very well. They played the crap out of that. And I know the sponsor was Xbox.
Yes, Microsoft Xbox. All right, world champion is still Triple H. WWE champion is still John Bradshaw Layfield. World Intercontinental... I don't know what the hell that means, Steven. Intercontinental champion is Shelton Benjamin. U.S. champion, Carlito, who had won. We'll talk about him. He had won the championship from John Cena on 10-7. Our tag team champions, La Resistance, still holding on to their titles. Actually, had won the titles back, rather. Chris Benoit Edge on the 11-1 Raw from Peoria, Illinois. They had, of course, lost them back at Taboo Tuesday. Tag team champions on SmackDown, Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree holding on to their gold. Cruiserweight champion, still Spike Dudley, the boss. Women's champion, still Trish Stratus. We had some releases, Scott, over the last month.
Really?
Albert, given the cut.
Well, we hadn't seen him in a while, so.
Torn rotator cuff, given the reason of a budget cut. Out of 322 matches, his TV record, 143, 169, and 13. Billy Gunn is no more. Released in 11-1, his contract has expired. 1,440 TV matches.
Wow.
Out of 1,000... Okay, sorry. So 1,440 matches total. Mm-hmm. On TV, he was 323, 181, and 19. So pretty good, actually.
That actually is very good.
Yeah. Rico was released on 11-2, budget cut. 305 total matches, 45 and 40 on TV. Nydia, former Tough Enough winner, already gone.
After the Cruiserweight thing ended, she was pretty much useless at that point.
On 11-3, 16-26-1 on TV, 141 total matches. Gail Kim released, budget cut.
That's a shame.
Johnny Stamboli released as a budget cut on 11-4, 231 total matches, 33-48-1 on TV. Linda Miles, Tough Enough 2 winner, already gone. 17 matches total, 3-2-2 on TV. Apparently had attitude problems, of course, with Shaniqua with the Bashams earlier in the year. No more King of Queens. So a lot of budget cuts going on. A big big slicing in November. A lot of these guys are gone. And women. TV by the numbers. 598 episodes of Raw in the books. 274 SmackDowns. 324 Heats. 129 Velocities. 24 episodes of Impact. On the 1021 SmackDown, Tough Enough Season 4 began. The $1 million Tough Enough. Here are the competitors. Chris Nowacki. Daniel Peter, Daniel Rodimer, John Meyer, Justice Smith, Mike Mizanin, Nick Mitchell, and Ryan Reeves. And a few of those guys would become something.
I just realized that. We had a Chris Nowinski and a Chris Nowacki.
Yep.
That's so funny.
And neither lasted very long.
No.
On the 11-4 SmackDown, Daniel Peter made waves by almost making Kurt Angle submit during a Tough Enough segment. Dave Meltzer went on to say, it was real. If you don't follow fighting, Peter had ankle in a Kimura or a key lock, as Taz called it, although Taz didn't fully let on that the move was fully executed. Not only was Angle not getting out of the move, but most MMA fighters would have tapped. Angle could not tap for obvious reasons. The ref counted three, even though Peter's shoulders are not down, trying to end the thing. because the reality is Angle would have been in surgery had it gone even a few seconds longer or Pewter not given up on the hold. Jimmy Corderas, who was the referee involved, set the record straight with an interview with Justin Henry, our good friend. Now, that was an interesting situation. What many people may not know is that Kurt was not 100% when this took place. He was still having neck issues. After Kurt wrestled around with the first young man, Chris Nowacki, Pewter stepped up and they had a go. Pewter was in great shape and really amped up. Kurt was an amateur wrestler, and as you know, a Kimura is not legal in amateur. Charles Robinson and I saw that things were starting to get very serious, and when Pewter got Kurt in the Kimura, we knew we had to do something. Kurt would have never submitted. Even while in the Kimura, Kurt got Pewter on his back, and I instinctively counted to three. In hindsight, being an amateur-style match, I could have only counted to one. The reason Kurt was so mad at Pewter is because he used an MMA hold. I was nervous and concerned throughout the whole ordeal. This became a big deal.
Well, because Pewter's a dick. That's why, pretty much.
Yeah, well, I mean, in his defense, I guess, he just was doing what he thought he needed to do to win.
True, but...
I mean, the contest was fight Kurt.
Right, but, you know, I think he obviously should have understood that this was not...
Right. Well, he's doing what he can to win, and Kurt wasn't going to give in. So, I mean, it was probably a stupid segment to do in the first place without letting them in on, hey, scooch. Let's not shoot.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it could have been bad. If Kurt got hurt, he would have been out.
And Pewter would have probably been kicked out. So.
International Heat. Rosie and the Hurricane defeated Eddie Craven and Jared Steele. Rhino defeated Jeremy Young. Regal and Eugene defeated La Resistance. And on the actual Heat, La Rez defended their tag team titles over Rosie and the Hurricane. On the 11-7, TNA had their very first three-hour pay-per-view, Victory Road. Hector Garza won a 20-man X-Division gauntlet. Eric Watts, Johnny B. Bad, Pat Kenny, and Ron Killings, as a team, defeated Kid Cash, Lance Hoyt, and the Naturals. Masquerita Sagrada defeated Piratita Morgan, right out of Bad Blood 97.
Yes.
Three Live Crew captured the tag team titles over Team Canada. Trinity defeated Jacqueline. Monty Brown defeated Abyss and Raven in a Monsters Ball match. Petey Williams retained over AJ Styles for the X title. Chris Harris survived the last team standing match against Triple X. Jeff Jarrett retained his NWA World Championship over Jeff Hardy after Kevin Nash smashed a guitar over the challenger's head and embraced with Scott Hall and Jarrett. After the pay-per-view, Macho Man Randy Savage made his way to ringside, and that was his final televised wrestling appearance.
Yes.
And he would not appear again for TNA.
Nope.
No,
he did.
He did. I'm sorry.
The six-man at the, like in the last... like 5 minutes and he threw a punch and that was it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So he is on one more time. On 11/19, Harley Race released his autobiography, History of Honor, The Era of Honor. On 11/5, I almost pulled the Nunez. Jushin Liger made his ROH debut by defeating Brian Danielson and Austin Aries and challenged Samoa Joe at a title match. Let's see. And of course, we just wanted to call this out as well because it's noted and I do not want to forget. We're going to do it right now. A little bit of fundraising. 3 weeks ago, Chloe Rotz, a six-year-old girl whose dad films a YouTube channel, Retro Library, was diagnosed with leukemia. The fundraiser has been set up to help with the medical bills. If you go to facebook.com/prayforChloeRotz, C-H-L-O-E-R-O-T-T, the link for the fundraiser is in the text box. So, shout out there, and we wish nothing but the best to young Chloe. So, that does it.
Most definitely.
That does it for the Sutton Files. Why don't you take us to our opener, Scott?
All right, JR, let's get things started. We begin... with our first title match of the evening, the Cruiserweight Championship on the line in a fatal four-way. And we've been digging the champion. He's been absolutely fantastic. And that is the Boss, complete with his weird, you know, Larg the Goat Boy tights and strange beard. But he's kicking it like Austin 01. And that is, of course, Spike Dudley. And he's taking on three former Cruiserweight champions. Mr. Kidman, please and all. Chavo Guerrero, your favorite cruiserweight, and Rey Mysterio, as someone would say down the line. Spike's been pretty awesome, but how do we get to this match with multiple guys?
On 10/21, Chavo Guerrero made his return to TV, confronted Billy Kidman, and gave him a quick beatdown in an attempt to get some revenge. On 11/4, Teddy Long announced that Spike would be defending his belt against Kidman, Guerrero, and Mysterio at the pay-per-view. The next week, Rey and Chavo beat Kidman and Spike when Rey pinned Dudley. This also marks the final appearance of Billy Kidman. Floats around the Cruiserweight division for the rest of the year before suffering a broken orbital bone in January. Returned in March to feud with Paul London over the Cruiserweight title before being released in June as a victim of a mass exodus of releases. Rumors swirled over the reasons for his release, but Kidman later claimed he got in a fight with management over their policy change regarding first-class flights. He would bounce around the indie circuit, eventually returning to WWE in 2009 as a trainer in the developmental territory. I believe still works as an agent today. Final record 3-8, going 0-1 at Mania, 0-1 at SummerSlam, 1-2 at Survivor Series, and 2-4 at other events. So this match here, Scott, you got Ray working solo tonight back in the Cruiserweight division away from RVD for a bit. Kidman heel turn still going strong. Chavo back from injury, still feels a little bit bland, but he's targeting Kidman. Spike Reign is still rolling on strong as well. He comes out by himself here, no Dudley boys backing him up. We get a tornado style match. Chavo goes right at Kidman as they pair off. Kidman and Spike work together until Kidman turns on him with a big dropkick. Ray and Chavo get an extended segment with Ray gaining the advantage. Spike attacks him from behind. Ray gets a great hurricanrana off the top to take Kidman from the apron to the floor. Chavo dives into Kidman and Ray afterwards. Spike follows and comes up empty and smashes into the floor. Chavo takes it to Kidman back of the ring with solid aggression. Spike steps back in and takes over on Ray, picks up a near fall before chucking him to the floor. Kidman hits a BK bomb on Ray, but Chavo presents a shooting star press. Prevents. Ray blocks a Dudley dog and hits a 619, but Kidman yanks him to the floor to block the West Coast pop. Chavo hits a gory bomb on Spike, but Kidman breaks it up. Ray takes out Kidman. Spike pins Chavo to sneak out the win. I thought it was good to see Spike win without his brothers having to get involved. Like, I like that for a change. Solid opener. I thought it had good pacing. It picked up down the stretch, and Chavo and Kidman's issues added to the heat of the match. It gave it a little bit of extra juice and kept Spike's stranglehold going. So what did you think of the match, and then what did you think of him going solo without the Dudleys here?
Oh, I definitely agree that that Spike, I think, needed to be on his own here. I mean, I've been saying for the last five or six vaults that it was time for them to leave. I mean, I know they stick around a little bit longer, but I think they just needed a stage for the four of them to really go out and go crazy. And you know, Spike, as we've mentioned, is a different kind of cruiserweight. I've always thought Billy Kidman, and I'm sad to see him go because I like Kidman a lot. I think it's that it's gonna be very hard for Spike to kind of keep this going. I mean, he's pretty much beaten almost everybody in the division, so I'm curious to see what the future holds for the belt. Obviously, Ray has always been the centerpiece of that division, but it's good to see Spike in this run. I thought it was a great match. I thought it was very different, kind of guys. I am Chavo'd out. I'm kind of like you in that aspect.
Well, did you think that Kidman and Chavo, the heat between the two of them, at least on the feud, added some juice to the match other than just being like four guys going at it? Because they kept going for each other. Chavo kept trying to get revenge. Yeah. They kept playing up the shooting star.
Yeah, no, I agree. You're right about that. I think that, I mean, you needed to have some kind of juice there or else nobody, I mean, we barely care about Chavo to begin with. I'd like to see a Spike. Have we seen a Spike Ray alone? I don't think we've
seen
it.
I mean, not on pay-per-view. There could have been one on TV,
on SmackDown,
maybe.
Probably.
Yeah, but nothing.
I'm looking forward to seeing, because I'm a little hazy on what the future holds. I'm curious to see if they did wrestle, because I think that's a good match for Spike. I think, you know, Ray is obviously the jewel of the division. Mm. I think that would be fun to see on pay-per-view.
Did you ever think this Spike would get this bump and this push?
Absolutely not. No, I thought he'd always be like, you know, Bubba and Devon's leftover. But I thought it was a great match. I think it was a good start to the show. Cleveland crowds are historically pretty good. So I think that was a good pick, because there's going to be some other picks on this show that are going to be a little... Mm. But I think that was a good start for them. So yeah, no, I definitely like it. And Spike Dudley retains his Cruiserweight Championship with a win in the four-way. I don't know what the future holds.
It's an awful burp.
I know. I tried to hide it.
It's a straight sausage and peppers. All right, take a drink. We go backstage where Heidenreich and Snitsky meet up. Intense face-to-face, very memorable segment there, where Snitsky says, "John, I like your poetry." And Heidenreich says, "I like what you do to babies." Really fucked up.
Like the favorite Matt Rotella scene of all
time. Yeah, it was screwed up. So they're kind of teasing something to do with in the future by having these guys kind of unite.
Yeah.
And they say they'll see each other soon. So.
Yeah, well, they're each other's character on those shows.
Right.
Heidenreich's the creepy big one on SmackDown, and Snitsky's the creepy big one on Raw. So it made sense. All right, next up, we have our, I believe it is our second title match of the evening. It is. We go to the Red Brand, JR, for our Intercontinental Championship match. Your champion is indeed Shelton Benjamin, and he is taking on former Intercontinental Champion, who had the belt for a little while earlier in the year and lost it when they in the ladder match at Unforgiven, and now he gets a shot here, and that is Christian. How did we get here, Jay?
Actually, was he champion in Unforgiven? I thought it was vacant. It was vacated by Edge, right?
You know what? It was in my head just as I finished that sentence.
So I don't think Christian
was vacant.
So Christian hasn't had it since like 03.
Okay, that's right. I thought he had gotten it earlier in the year.
Okay. Debut of Christian's new theme, by the way. His famous one that he'd have for the rest of his career, Just Close Your Eyes.
Yep. This one was a little different version of it,
right.
though. Version of it.
Has Tomko with him, as always, as well. So, on 10/25, Shelton Benjamin defeated Chris Jericho in a Taboo Tuesday rematch. After the bout, Christian jumped Shelton and knocked him out with an Unprettier. Christian grabbed the IC belt, held it high in celebration. The next week, Bischoff announced that Christian would challenge Shelton at the pay-per-view. Later that night, Shelton confronted Christian, but Christian dodged fighting him. Shelton said that he knew Tomko was out with an injury. Christian then said he had a new bodyguard for the night, Viscera. Christian and Viscera would jump Shelton and leave him laid out. Finally, a week later, Shelton got momentum by fighting off Christian en route to defeating Tomko, who had just returned, in a singles match. So the match itself, Scott, Shelton has a good reign going on since Taboo Tuesday. Pretty basic work early with Shelton frustrating the challenger. He dings up his shoulder, dings up Christian's shoulder a bit. Shelton's not deterred at all, continues to work over Christian, and even fights through Tomko's distraction to continue. Shelton finally tries to take out Tomko, but Christian slugs him off the apron into the barricade to take over the match. Christian goes for covers throughout, showing his goal is just to win the title. He's not really too interested in injuring Shelton or anything like that. Christian works the neck. Shelton makes a quick comeback, dodges a move, and hits a T-bone suplex for the win. I thought it was a nice, solid win, a good defense by Shelton. He fought through the odds, fought off Tomko, and persevered. And I thought it was a good spot for Christian, too, to kind of be back in the title mix, but also back in a spot to help get Shelton over in a continuous title reign.
Yeah, I thought this was a good opportunity for Shelton to take on a different kind of opponent. This is what like a pure heel opponent. He did face Orton back in June at Bad Blood, but Christian, a very different kind of worker than Orton is. I enjoyed the pace of this match. Shelton seemed very comfortable for a guy who's kind of fresh as a solo babyface. Tomko, you know, did his best. But I really liked the way Shelton worked this match. Acted like a veteran for a guy who isn't. Christian did a great job as well. I thought this was a good combination of guys and a good second match. I think we're 2-for-2. I'm not going to lie. I think we're 2-for-2 on matches so far. Well worked. I mean, we gave it in our original ratings. We were not overly well. Let me
think. I think we're 2-for-2 with like solid matches.
Yeah, I was looking at the
so not match, not 2-for-2 with like, you know, great matches or anything. But you know, right. They haven't failed. We'll put it that way.
No, they've been really solid. So Shelton Benjamin, 2-for-2 for champions. He retains his Intercontinental title with a hard fought win, a good length, about a little under 13.5 minutes, and Christian is vanquished. So a good win for. For Shelton Benjamin.
All right. We then head backstage. Kurt Angle and Edge meet up over a cup of coffee. Nice call back to their past. Edge brags about what he did to Shawn Michaels, and Kurt teases that he would do it if they ever fought. So, again, a little bit of foreshadowing.
You know what's funny? I totally forgot about that
when
I first heard. I'm like, because I thought they just started, but I'm like, oh.
I mean, is this the first year? Well, I guess we've had it a few times. But I feel like it really picks up now where you almost knew with Survivor Series you're going to get some teases.
Yes.
For Mania. Like, yeah. We had it before, because I know we had it with like Goldberg and Brock. Back in 03, so it's happened before, I guess. But.
Yeah, no, we definitely get a, I mean, Kurt's pretty clear that he says he could do it to Sean, and you know, Sean hasn't been talked about much. He's been in and out on in action. Eugene with the stupid big gloves, and oh my god,
yeah, he shows up and annoys Kurt, and Curtis leaves.
Yeah, he annoys me too. All right, next up, our first of our two Survivor style matches, JR, one for each show. This is the SmackDown Survivor Series match. We have, speaking of the aforementioned, and Team Guerrero.
I get to watch this shit show in person. Go ahead.
That's right.
He's trying. And just when I thought time had set me free, those thoughts of you keep taunting me. A feeling I never outgrew, though each and every part of me has tried. I can never get enough of Lisa Loeb, I know that.
Lisa Loeb. I don't even know if that guy wears glasses. Anyway, and of course, taking on... By the way, right after the Kurt and Edge skit, they did the first of what would be many WrestleMania recalls, JR.
Yes, yep.
Because right now, Michael and Taz announce, or of course, remind everyone that WrestleMania 21 mm-hmm. will be in April in Los Angeles.
Yep.
So, all right. So we have Team Angle, and his team consists of himself, Mark Jindrak, Taz's favorite guy, Luther Reigns, and this new guy who somehow has a belt. We'll get to him in a minute. And Team Guerrero is, of course, Eddie himself, The Big Show, Rob Van Dam, and former U.S. champion John Cena. But I said former U.S. champion JR because he does not have the U.S. title anymore.
Right, so let's cover a couple things here. So Carlito Caribbean Cool, the son of legendary Puerto Rican superstar Carlos Colon. Carlito began his career for the Puerto Rican WWC in 1999. In 2003, he signed a developmental deal with WWE, which caused some controversy in his homeland, where many fans thought he sold out. Carlito shrugged off the barbs and realized his dream by debuting in the 10-7 SmackDown after a series of vignettes to hype his debut. On the 10-7 SmackDown, it opened with John Cena coming down to address the fans. During his promo, Carlito Caribbean Cool made his official debut, interrupting the U.S. champion. After entertaining back and forth, Cena challenged Carlito to a match, and the rookie accepted. After Cena refused to shake his hand, Carlito kicked him and dropped him with a DDT and spit his trademark apple on him. Later in the night, Carlito shocked the WWE by clocking Cena with Cena's very own chain and winning the U.S. title in his debut match. The next week, Teddy Long appeared and announced John Cena had been involved in a bar fight, who suffered a punctured kidney after being stabbed. In reality, Cena was off TV filming The Marine, a WWE movie production. The next week, Teddy confronted Carlito about the rumors that Carlito was in the club with Cena the night he got stabbed. Carlito denied it and said he wanted to speak with his lawyer. On 10/28, Carlito finally admitted he was in the club, but that he left when Cena arrived. Carlito then introduced us to his new bodyguard, Jesus. On 11/11, Teddy let everyone know that Jesus was the prime suspect in Cena's stabbing, and we'll continue this story next month. On 10/7, The Big Show defeated Mark Jindrak after getting an assist from Eddie Guerrero, who ran off an interfering Kurt Angle. The next week, Eddie picked up a win over Luther Reigns, but Luther and Jindrak beat him down after the bell. Angle came out looking to cut Eddie's hair, but Show made the save. The war continued a week later, and this time Team Angle is victorious, as Angle helped Jindrak cheat to defeat Guerrero. On 10/28, Teddy announced that Eddie and Kurt would captain Survivor Series teams. He'd go on to announce the two teams. Later that night, Big Show confronted Eddie and demanded to be added to his team, and Eddie obliged. The next week, Kurt offered the fourth spot to Carlito, and he accepted. Later that night, Teddy announced he was putting Rey Mysterio in the Cruiserweight match at the pay-per-view, and he told Eddie he had a week to find a fourth partner. On 11/11, Eddie and RVD teamed up to defeat Jindrak and Reigns. After the bout, Eddie announced that John Cena would be his fourth team member, as he would return from his stabbing at Survivor Series. In the main event that night, Big Show battled Kurt. During the match, Carlito knocked out Eddie and RVD with Cena's chain, allowing Team Angle to triple Team Show. Jindrak and Reigns held him down. Angle hooked on the ankle lock and wrenched it to end the program. So, big Survivor Series-style match set up here. Angle has his usual backup, plus the newcomer. Like we mentioned, Big Show selling his ankle injury from SmackDown, heavily taped up. I thought this was a nice slot for RVD, gets him back into the higher SmackDown slots. Eddie's still feuding with Kurt Angle's guys as well. Cena gets the final entrance at a huge pop, coming back from the stabbing and looking focused on Carlito and Jesus. Cena charges and beats on Jesus around the ring into the back with Carlito running away from them. Cena shows good fire and anger, dispatches Jesus, but then Jesus fights back and him and Carlito jump into a random car. They drag a woman out of it and speed away, and John Cena comes back to the ring. So let's pause there for a minute, Scott. I want to get your thoughts on Carlito's debut, the way they pushed him out of the gate, the stuff with Jesus, the stabbing, and also the pop Cena gets when he's the last man intro'd.
I was kind of stunned. I knew that I knew watching the vignettes and, JR question. I'm not sure if you know who that guy is, but what jersey did John Cena walk out wearing?
I believe it was, Trent Richardson.
No, it was Bernie Kosar. No, oh, okay. It was Jim Brown. I think that Trent Richardson, Ernest Biner, first off, I loved the whole package. First off, Carlito obviously was a great heel. The vignettes, JR, very Razor Ramon-ish, which was very cool.
Yeah, there was definitely a heavy Ramon vibe.
Yeah, that which I think added to the juice of it. I was I was pretty stunned when he won the U.S. title, though. I mean, I was blown away. First night, I was blown away.
Especially over Cena, who had, you know, seemed to have the kind of the rocket to him. It seemed like he would hold it for a while. And but they obviously had big things planned for Carlito. They saw him as being a star, or at least, you know, upper-level star. Jesus's pants maybe speak differently, but
they're very
good. What did you think of Cena's pop coming in?
Oh, it was gigantic. Yeah, no, that was huge. And I think him losing the title hurts. I think it was a test. I think it was a test to see if he could keep his juice without a belt. And I mean, this is the beginning of the match when he's just beating the when Carlito's running off like a scalded dog, and Jesus is getting the shit beat out of him in those awesome you know, Cuban pimp pants, wearing suspenders and a belt, pretty awesome. And Carlito bugs out and leaves. Everything worked here. Carlito was a perfect guy for Cena, and I think Cena was a perfect guy for Carlito. So I think everything worked here. Good booking by, I would guess, Paul, right? Was Heyman booking SmackDown still? I think he was, right? Yes, I think so. Good thinking there, because I think it worked perfectly for both of them. Helped Cena.
I don't know if he still was.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think he was.
No, I don't think he was. But I wanted to give him credit. I don't know. Michael Hayes. But anyway. Good.
It might have been Hayes.
Yeah, but good job there, because I think Cena... needed a little juice. Thank God he didn't break his arm trying to stick it, pull a Goldberg
through the window.
That was genius. And for Carlito, it helped to have a guy that had some cred on SmackDown. So excellent booking all around for both guys.
Yep. And back in the ring, Big Show wrecks Jindrak with chops and headbutts. RVD and Eddie teamwork, keeping the heat on. Jindrak, Eddie, Angle jumps Eddie from behind to swing the momentum. Luther punishes Eddie back. Angle tags in and out. Their team, team Angle tags in and out, maintaining control of Eddie on the mat. Eddie gets a hot tag to RVD and hits a frog splash on Jindrak, but he rolls out of the ring. Kurt rolls up RVD and uses the ropes to eliminate him, but then Eddie repays the favor, hooks the ropes, and eliminates Jindrak. So we get two quick eliminations, but a soft one for RVD. Kind of not a great showing for him. Angle dodges Big Show. Big Show makes quick work of Luther Reigns with a choke slam, forcing Kurt into a tough situation. Kurt goes right at the Angle, but Big Show powers out of the ankle lock. Angle tries to leave, but RVD drives him back to the ring. Cena hits an FU. Eddie hits the frog splash, and Big Show covers him for the win. It was a fun Survivor Series match. Kurt gets his full comeuppance, which is nice kind of payback for all the shit things he's done all year, both to Eddie and Big Show. Nice shine for Eddie as he's rehabbed a bit more here now after a tough few months since he lost the title. Big Show continues to look strong as well, and Cena keeps getting elevated up the card, and RVD gets to celebrate anyway. Even though he didn't win the match, he stays out there and celebrates. So I like it. It was kind of a fun old-school Survivor Series match. Kind of remind me of, I don't know, like 87, the one with Honky.
Oh, yes.
Where, like,
yeah.
You know, all the guys get to beat up on him, except he ran away, but, you know, Kurt gets pinned. But it felt like that, where all the guys that hate him basically ran through his team and then got to beat the piss out of him.
Yeah. There was a lot I liked about this match. Number one, like you said, it had that old school feel, which I think was huge. Because, you know, obviously the typical wrestling fan at this point, post Attitude Era, kind of in limbo. I don't know if they totally had the patience for Survivor matches. Old school watchers like you and I and a lot of other people love at least one, and on this night we had two. And I think you had a good group of guys, and you know, you need to get these guys on the card, the Luther Reigns and Jindrak and those guys. You need to get them on the card. They're good, serviceable workers. What were your thoughts on Eddie's slot in the company? We're going to talk about another guy later on the other brand. What'd you think of Eddie's slot in the company at this moment? I mean, he obviously captained this team, but did you feel he was like lost after losing the JBL feud?
I had felt that way, but I feel like he's kind of back on track now. I mean, by default, being on SmackDown, he's going to be in the B, you know, kind of B level. So he's not going to be a top-tier guy anyway. But I feel like matches like this and where he heads next has kind of bumped him back up towards the top end of SmackDown. I feel like he dropped after losing to Kurt at SummerSlam and then feuding with, you know, Luther going into No Mercy. I feel like he had kind of been forgotten a bit, but I feel like he's kind of back here. This is the match really gets him back up there.
Okay. Yeah, I think so, too. We'll talk about his compadre later on in the show. I think things are a lot worse for him. But this was a fun match. Kurt needed to kind of eat the loss here, you know, to kind of give Eddie some momentum. And the only weird thing is, I guess, obviously, Big Show has had to deal with Kurt's ankle lock because he's got his left foot taped. But I'm thinking to myself, why are you taping the boot? What's taping the boot going to do? It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
It keeps the boot secure, not from moving around on his ankle.
I don't know. Seems weird to tape the boot up. Yeah. But anyway, I liked the match a lot. It was, you know, it was fun for what it was. You had a bunch of, you know,
it was a lot better than the SmackDown in 01 and 03 that had a real bunch of inexperienced big dudes. Mm. I don't think Jindrak was a bad worker.
He's all right.
You know, he was okay. He was serviceable. RVD still, like, jumbled up.
Well, I mean, he gets a slot in the match, which is cool, but then he's the only one eliminated. It's a roll-up. He doesn't really show much. So, I mean, whatever. Step forward, three back.
Yeah, it is what it is. But anyway, Team Eddie wins the Survivor Series match. Do we have the... Let's do the eliminations real quick. Did you... You didn't do the...
Yeah, I went through.
You did. All right, well, never mind then. Here we go. Okay, so there you go. Team Eddie with the win.
All right, we head backstage where Snitsky assaults Maven, beats the piss out of him, and leaves him bloodied on the ground. So,
yeah.
We'll see how that plays into our main
Snitsky
event.
Snitsky getting a lot of shine, huh? Mm-hmm. We thought it was just going to end at Taboo Tuesday, but he seems to be getting a lot of shine here. So, all right, next up is a match that I've got a lot to discuss, obviously, right after JR does his comments. But this is a match that really made me realize how you watch a wrestling match. If you're kind of a smart, and not smart like Smark, but smart like a wrestling fan who's watched stuff for a long time. And that is a match that comes from what happened at the end of No Mercy between Heidenreich and the Dead Man. How do we get here?
On 10-7, a lot happened on 10-7. Paul Heyman led Heidenreich to the ring to read some poetry. After the crowd refused to let him read, Heidenreich jumped to the floor and beat down a planted fan. The next week, Long told Heyman that the fans were suing. And that Teddy's job was on the line. If he got canned, he was taking Heyman down with him. Later in the show, Heidenreich apologized to the fan, but refused to apologize to Undertaker for what he did at No Mercy. The next week, Heyman told Heidenreich he'd be forced to wear a straitjacket to and from the ring. Heidenreich continues to challenge Undertaker every chance he had, but Taker would not show up for an answer. Later that night, Teddy promised Heyman that Heidenreich could get his pay-per-view match with Taker if Heyman could get the Dead Man to sign the contract by the next week. A week later, we saw Heyman negotiating with Undertaker in an undisclosed location. After some back and forth, Taker signed the deal and told Heyman he would execute Heidenreich. So, intense stakes there by Taker. Weird feud. Get that awkward contract signing. Taker looks for revenge after what happened in No Mercy. Heidenreich's interesting entrance, like we mentioned, with the straitjacket and, of course, the awesome theme that he has now. Heidenreich.
Paul in the background.
Taker uses his power to counter Heidenreich's early attack. He lands a big boot on a wild charge. Taker works the arm, but Heyman distracts him during the old school and allows a Heidenreich low blow. Heidenreich works the lower body and groin. Taker battles back and hits a big leg drop across the ring apron and then follows with old school this time. Cole talks about Taker's ties to Survivor Series and the importance of the event. Heyman distraction again costs Taker as he whiffs on a charging kick and crotches himself on the buckle. Heidenreich punches away Taker with a very basic attack. Heidenreich goes to chinlock and hits a big clothesline for the near fall. Match turns into a slugfest, trading control back and forth. Taker rallies with a top rope clothesline, hits a snake eyes, big boot, and leg drop for a two count. Heidenreich makes a surprising comeback with a sidewalk slam, punches in the corner but gets caught in the last ride, but gets the ropes for a save on a really, really close near fall. Taker battles back and hits the chokeslam and tombstone for the win. And no shame in that loss for Heidenreich. It's a solid showing. He took all of Taker's big moves. He landed a lot of offense. And I thought it was a much better match than you may expect. Both guys hustled. Only had a brief slowdown. I mean, Heidenreich had shaky offense, but he had a lot of energy in the ring. Like, he was kind of nonstop and really, you know, good facials and everything else. And Taker really led him through as a veteran. I thought it was a fine showing. I thought neither guy had anything to be embarrassed about. I thought... You know, Heidenreich losing clean doesn't kill him at all because he took all the big moves and, you know, lost to a tombstone like many have before. I actually enjoyed this match way more than I thought I would.
All right. Number one, I think Heidenreich should have won the match. I think this feud could have had some more legs. And you have...
Well, it does have legs. I don't think it ends here.
I don't either, but...
But I feel like with Heyman... And a psycho like Heidenreich, I feel like you don't necessarily need the win to keep the hate going. Mm. Like, I'm fine. To me, Taker's not a spot where, like, a loss to Heidenreich, I don't know. I mean, it helps Heidenreich, but, like, a nut like Heidenreich could be fine. Like, I think you got to protect Taker a little bit, and you can't have him lose to every guy we're entering into a feud with.
No, I agree.
But he just came off the choking against JBL in the two title matches. Mm. You know what I mean?
That's true.
All right, well...
That's 50-50. I could see that. It wouldn't have been nice to see Heidenreich win, but you're right. I mean, at this point, that kind of guy, wins and losses is irrelevant. Which brings me to this point. And I've been holding it in and working it in my head since I watched it and that we were going to do this vault. Now, if you're just a plain fan of wrestling, if you don't do podcasts or you don't write anything and you just enjoy, I think you have a right to think and feel any way you want about any kind of match. And if you're just a fan who likes to watch stuff, but, you know, you don't really care what people think of your opinion or whatever, then you could be like, well, you know, I hate both these guys. This match is going to suck, blah, blah, blah. However, if you're somebody who has a podcast or is one of those smart fans who wants to think, not smart like smart, but smart like somebody who understands wrestling, I've learned that every match you watch, I think you have to take in a vacuum, individually, and not think whether your favorite guys or wrestle a certain way or think that, well, you know, these two guys, if they're not going to wrestle like, you know, Eddie and Ray at Halloween Havoc 97, then the match sucks. That's a lot of expectations for two guys like Taker and Heidenreich. I feel like you got to go into matches based on the two guys and go, okay, well, we know we're not going to get crazy work rate. So let's think about these two guys. Taker is, you know, got his, you know, he's at the age, he has his move set, and he goes with it. Heidenreich is very limited, but he's a good, you know, he's a decent power guy. I'm going to go into this match thinking, if they can at least put their power moves over and make them look really good and be very energetic in accepting each other's offenses, and we get some good comebacks, a little storytelling, I think we can get a good match without needing, you know, five-star, you know, Benoit Angle, Rumble 03, which I think a lot of fans...
Unless you're Stephen Graham, that's a half star.
Well, yeah, well, whatever. Perfect example. Maybe he doesn't like either of those guys, but that's, well, he's just flat wrong in that aspect. But you can't go into a match like Heidenreich and Taker and go, ugh, this is going to be terrible. Two sluggish, boring power guys. It's not like watching Tatsumi Fujinami. No, of course it's not. We're not all that dumb. But what you have to do is you have to go to a match like Taker and Heidenreich, which is what I did, and think, all right, here's two guys who have limited power ability, but let me see if they can make something out of it. And I think they did. The match was, I mean, they got a lot of time, almost 16 minutes. But every move looked great. Every move was put over. They were throwing themselves around. There was a lot of energy in the ring. The crowd helped them out. I think that match on its own is better than people think of when they just look at it on a screen or on paper and say, oh God, Taker Heidenreich, Jesus. Because they're thinking, well, we're not going to get, you know, five-star work rate like we would cruiserweights. Because they're not cruiserweights. You have to take a match like that and go, all right, what am I going to get out of these two guys? And what you got is two power guys, one older guy and one younger guy, who have limited move sets, but have a power move set that if they can bring the energy at least, then those moves look even better. That's what I got out of Taker and Heidenreich. I may be overanalyzing this, but to me it's an example of when you see two, quote, power guys that everybody wants to trash because they're not, you know, cruiserweights or Eddie Guerrero or anything like that, you know? And I think that's wrong. So if you're going to go in thinking that, you know, you need to be objective and take these matches at face value on their own, you have to look at the type of workers in the ring. And those two guys really brought a lot for 16 minutes. When I first watched it, I didn't realize the match was that long. But I don't think they did a bad job at all. I think for what they had and what they could bring, it was a very entertaining match. Was it five stars? No. It was, you know, two and a half. If you're going by halves. If you're going by quarters, maybe 2 3/4. But I think you need to take matches like that.
I think the key is you mentioned the 16 minutes, and I think that was a key to your point in that, I mean, they hustled for 16 minutes. That was what exactly impressed me the most. They never really slowed down too much. They really kept moving, and I think we're starting to see, and we'll be following this over the next year or so, the resurgence of the in-ring style for The Undertaker. And it almost maybe begins here. I mean, he's coming off kind of a soft series with JBL, kind of blah matches, but really worked hard here. And like I said, he led Heidenreich through the match for the most part.
Right.
But yeah, I the only part I disagree with you was on Heiderich needing to win. I don't think he needs to win.
No, that's fine. I'm fine. That was just my opinion.
He's a maniac that tried to murder the guy. So like, yeah, he doesn't give a shit if he wins or loses.
Michael Cole. So.
Right. He doesn't really care if he loses. I mean, right. He just wants to destroy the guy.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, the match definitely surprised me, and I'm glad to rewatch it for that reason. And to this point, I mean, not a bad show.
No, I don't think so. Actually, it hasn't been bad so far. I was pretty surprised. So. So there you go. Taker gets the win. I'm not saying it was a bad move for him to win. I'm just saying I think he could go either way on it, but that's fine. That doesn't hurt me in terms of enjoying the match. But backstage, I'll take this one.
Okay. Eric Bischoff shows up and he says Maven is probably out for the main event, so it's going to be 4-on-3 because Maven's too banged up.
Yes, and he says that he doesn't want Evolution whining and having to go to... He wants to go on vacation and not have to be on a boardroom in Stanford.
Right, because they had a replacement or whatever. Yeah, so. All right, next match.
All right, which brings us to our next match, which is our next title match of the evening, JR. The Women's Championship is on the line. And by the way, first time I've seen this on pay-per-view, JR, but during this show...
We get our first glimpse.
Yes, I meant to mention that, yeah.
Of our first glimpse of something you and I would lean on for many, many moons to come.
Mm-hmm.
24/7 on demand. Yes. Right now.
So, pretty cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. Really big moment, of course. I remember reading that first schedule that time in the code area. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yep.
Really cool stuff and a big moment ahead. So,
we'll dive into that when we get there.
So on 10/25, Trish confronted Lita backstage, made fun of her careers, all the careers that she's killed, and called her chubby. Lita snapped, and a catfight ensued. The next week, Bischoff announced this match. Trish continued her verbal assault on 11/1, calling Lita a loser and a kiss of death. She played a video of all the careers she killed, including Esse Rios, when she dug that out from, the Hardy Boys, the show Dark Angel that she guest starred on that would get canceled afterwards, Matt Hardy's singles career, Kane, and her own baby. Lita came out to attack, but Gail Kim came down and helped Trish beat Lita up. On 11/8, the two ladies appeared on Chris Jericho's highlight reel and got into another verbal sparring match. Lita vowed to take her aggressions out on Trish at the pay-per-view. Snitsky came down with a baby doll, mocked Lita and punted the doll into the crowd to add further insult to injury.
Sick bastard.
Real mess. I like that they reignited this feud, because remember we mentioned at Taboo Tuesday that all of Trish's contenders are gone, and we're kind of back to, all right, who's going to be the one that steps up? And I liked that this feud was set more than like just the usual diva feud where it's just the challenger du jour, challenger of the month. Mm-hmm. It's like they have some real heat behind it, and for the first time they're really letting them tell the story through promos and through interviews where they're actually really cutting each other up, and they have enough history that's believable. And their feuding as far back as 2000 when they were with the Hardys and TNA. Mm-hmm. So that was cool to see it take that turn and actually have a lot of heat and anger behind it. And that plays right into the match. So the feud is reignited. Lita kind of the last remaining challenge to Trish right now. Trish, just a brutal, mean girl during the whole Kane fiasco. Lita comes in, shoves Trish down and is pissed off. Lita's still a bit stilted, but Trish is just selling her ass off, bumping all around. The fight spills outside. Lita uses a chair and viciously hammers Trish and gets DQ'd right away. Lita's attack was really stiff. I thought it made sense within the story. I thought it was fine in this moment to sacrifice the match to have this kind of fight. Trish's nose gets busted open badly. She's blood everywhere. Lita viciously spikes her to the mat and then hooks in a rare choke. Really cool segment. I thought the brutality worked. Trish's blood all in her hair and she's like freaking out. I thought it was really top line diva stuff that we haven't seen, I mean, I guess since Trish and Victoria, but I think it's even better than that. Not in-ring quality, but as far as having a story and having heat behind it and having a lot of anger and hatred and fuel. I thought the brawl was good. I thought Lita showed good fire for someone that's usually kind of stilted in their promos. And it was believable. She had so much shit happen to her in 2004, and she just like unloaded it all on Trish, who'd been such a bitch to her. I really liked the fight. It was one of the highlights of the show to me.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, for only a minute and a half, I think that was the point. I think Lita... The belt was secondary to her. She just wanted to knock her in the mouth and shut her up. I think the best one is she says something, and then she turns to Tomko and goes, and they call me a slut.
Yeah.
That was like one of my favorites. Boy, is Trish just on, though? I mean, she's just on right now.
Yeah, I mean, by late 02 and into 03, she had gained confidence in the ring, but the heel turn has taken her to next level as far as like confidence goes and everything else. I mean, she's really, you can just see it in her that she feels more like a wrestler than a women's wrestler. She's just a wrestler now. And that transformation has happened since the heel turn, where she's confident, she has presence, she has some gravitas. Like, you know, she's very believable. She has cachet with the fans. It's not like shoehorned or forced in. Mm-hmm. You know, she just seems natural now. And she's come a long way since 2000.
Yeah,
and
no,
she was really wooden and frigid on the mic and, you know, not great in the ring. And she's really turned it around over 4 years and become one of the best that they've had in a long time, as far as WWF is concerned.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this was a perfect example. I mean, we had two long matches to come after this. And the legitimacy of that Lita just wanted to beat the shit out of her, and the belt will come in time. I thought was fantastic. Busting or no, I think the blood was the best part. I think that added even more. Trish is freaking out. Oh my god! My nose is broken. And I don't know what I'm doing. And it was crazy. For just that little 4 or 5 minute window, we saw some great storytelling. And they kind of have to. You're right. Right now, the women's division, it's kind of a dearth of talent right now.
It's not even a dearth of talent. I mean, well, a lot of them have been let go after Taboo Tuesday, like we covered, but Trish had kind of run through them all. So it's kind of like, who's left? I mean, do you recycle stuff? And we kind of do with Lita, but it has some twists to it. So it's good. I mean, and we haven't had blood in the women's division since the Trish Victoria stuff. And that, even that was
right.
I mean, Trish here, I think it was obviously hard way. Mm-hmm. But I mean, she had blood everywhere and all in her hair and everything else. So I liked it a lot. It was a good women's segment, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. And Trish retains her women's championship, but Lita really could care less. And this doesn't end. It goes into December on Raw. We will make a point about it when we get to the next Raw pay-per-view. All right, why don't we take a break? When we come back, two matches left, including our WWE Championship and Raw's Survivor match for control of the show. But first, words aplenty, root beer, sausage and peppers, because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
This is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
All right, Nation, welcome back. We are in the midst of reviewing Survivor Series 2004. We're both here inside the PTB studios, and Scott and I together, of course, had like we said, has a little sausage peppers, the St. Mary's Feast. We have a big party coming up tomorrow. We'll have some PTBN family members in the house. We'll have Mr. D'Amato will be here.
Yes.
The Cowboy, as always. Glenn Butler.
Glenny Bun.
Yeah, yes. So we'll have some of the crew here alive and in person. And I guess Jeff Machado still hanging on by a thread, but he's
barely.
And I mention him because we have a new episode of Richard and the Mailman. The show returned, and
that's what's always.
Oh yeah, they didn't miss a beat. So Andrew Flanagan, part of the show, is forcing them to watch Jersey Shore. So Josh Richard hates Jersey Shore, can't stand it. Okay. Jeff Machado
makes
loves
sense.
It. Jeff and Andy loves it too. So they're making Josh watch it to better appreciate and understand why he should not hate the show. So they did the first two episodes in this, and they're going to go through the series. But, of course, as always, leads to a lot of arguments and a lot of pent-up frustration. And, you know, I'll let you guys listen. But it's well worth the investment just to hear the fight at the end.
I can't fathom, and I've known Jeff, you know, what, 10 years now, close. And I didn't think he had anything left to pent up.
It's there.
The time I've seen him, anyway.
It's in the belly, so. Also, Scott, you want to talk quickly about the last night's main event?
Yes, myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Woolley, and Glenn Butler. We previewed Battleground, of course, this Sunday. And, well, big crew here that night for that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We'll all be here. Yeah. Yeah,
and, of course, we will. That's no surprise. We will have Boneheads. So we previewed Battleground, and then we had a fun little segment. I kind of let Steve run the show. We earlier in the week, WWE.com put forth their top 10 favorite or best matches of the half year, and then we went through them, and then we kind of, you know, took stuff out, moved them around, added shitting things, and then we did. I was going through their countdown list, and there was one from early June. Their top 10 greatest sports entertainment fans of all time. Did you ever look at that list?
No.
Who do you think number one was?
Vladimir.
It is Vladimir. You know what else on that list? The Miz girl.
You beat your kid, yeah.
Yeah, so check it out. Cool. Main event, great show.
Greeny had his weekend playlist, as always, this week in 1997. It's not a funeral. It's an awesome year in music.
Exactly.
Seinfeld, the PTBN series rewatch, The Stall, of course, starring Dan Cortez. And we get a retweet from the Mimbo himself of that episode, a great episode. Check that out. New installment of Goodwill Wrestling. My buddy Goodwill Will from Texas was joined by Parv, and they did a live watch of a couple matches from the 1970s. So be sure to check those out. Tag Teams back again had their episode 7, the Midnight Rockers versus Buddy Rose and Doug Summers series from 86 and 87. Five matches they covered in that series. If you're looking for some AWA, check it out. Adam Wilcox back with the second installment of the Calendar Correlation, looking at Bash of the Beach 97. Scott, our Vintage Vault refresh series, looked at In Your House 1. And I always laugh when I look at this picture. I can't get enough of it.
Todd and your girl?
You in the house! Yes.
Todd's hair was terrible.
Yeah, well, by In Your House 2, at least, the mullet was gone.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly, yeah.
Jay Martell, looking at the top 10 movies that Marvel needs to make. Aaron George looked at a great alternative, this week's ROH TV. Our What If series was back for July. And we talked about what if Hulk Hogan was not the NWO's third man, and what if some other interesting choices were. So the What If series, a monthly piece here at PTBN. Glenn Butler had his Wednesday walk around the web. Titans of Wrestling was back. An interview with the devil himself, Kevin Sullivan, came in to the Titan studio, and NWA president Bruce Tharp returned as well. I heard Kevin had some interesting thoughts on Parv, so be sure to check that out. Russell Sellers. I had his newest Sellers Point. Brian Bayless had his Raw review. And, of course, our Kevin Kelly Show episode 39 was in the books this past Monday with the Patriot, Del Wilkes. If you haven't listened to it yet, I really implore you to check out the interview. Del was very open, talked a lot about his career in All Japan, his problems with drugs and his bouncing back and where he is today. Talked a lot of college football. And he will be back with us at a future episode to talk his WWF and WCW days as well, and AWA. So be sure to check that out. PlaceToBeNation.com, the one place to be in your pop culture world. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. Place number two, Be Nation on Twitter.
Okay.
What's next?
All right. Next up, co-main event. Your WWE Championship is on the line. Your champion continues to be John Bradshaw Layfield. His cabinet getting a little... I'm telling you, hearing that right next to you now, he is saying getting Lex Luger in the John.
The Giants. He's saying the Giants.
I think he wants Lex Luger in the John. New number one contender, and he's been a heel. He's been a heel for most of 2004, of course, feuded with John Cena for the U.S. title. But kind of a change of heart here, JR. How did we get here?
On 10/21, Booker teamed with RVD and Rey Mysterio to take on JBL, Kenzo Suzuki, and Rene Dupree in a Champions Showcase tag match. Booker would get the win for his team by pinning JBL, and the next week JBL talked about his loss. It was the first time he had been pinned since WrestleMania. Booker came in and busted on the champ in Orlando Jordan, who Booker had said was JBL's houseboy. Teddy then came in and said Booker would take on Orlando that night, and if Booker won, he would face JBL at the pay-per-view. Booker won the match and earned his title shot. A week later, Josh Matthews was interviewing Orlando Jordan and JBL and got a bit snarky about OJ's match, leading to JBL smacking Matthews in the face. Josh lost his cool and ripped into OJ and stormed off. Later, Booker and OJ squared off again, but this time JBL interfered and left Booker laid out. After that beatdown, Booker wanted a match with JBL and OJ, but Teddy said he needed a partner. Enter the angered Josh Matthews, who was tired of JBL's abuse and agreed to be Booker's partner. Booker and Josh won the match when Booker pinned OJ. The next week, Matthews got more revenge by defeating Orlando in a singles match after an assist from Booker. JBL then announced that if he lost to Booker, he would leave SmackDown forever. So I liked the Booker face turn. What did you think? I thought it was much needed. I thought his heel turn had run a little cool, and I thought the heel turn was needed at the time, too. I thought that rejuvenated him, but he was getting cheered again. He had the Bland series with Cena. I liked the stuff here with Orlando Jordan. I liked the stuff with JBL. I thought it gave Booker a reason to get fired up again. And did you think, so tell me about Booker and then tell me, did you think the JBL stip was meaningless and made it obvious that he wasn't going to lose?
I did like the Booker face turn because we've been talking for the last few, SmackDown vaults that, the roster on the blue brand is a little imbalanced. And now you've already kind of burned through Eddie. You've burned through Taker, who's left. You kind of had to have Booker in this spot, and I was fine with it. Now I do want to point a personal note here. Did anybody give JBL crap for calling Booker a houseboy when, you know, Triple H was called a racist the year before for
well, Booker called OJ a houseboy.
Oh, I thought it was OJ called Booker. So they never mind. I was gonna say something else, but leave it alone. All right. But no. Anyway, the heel turn was a big deal. And or the face turn was a big deal because the roster on SmackDown is a little, was a little light. As for JBL, I think the cabinet just made him better.
Oh yeah, no,
good heels.
Right.
Need, I don't want to say factions.
Well, let's talk about that in a minute. I just want to know: did the stip telegraph.
Oh, the snip ruined it.
Right.
Yeah,
and that was so unneeded. Like, we just didn't
need for
it.
No, it was no need for it.
Well, I mean, was it a snip? I don't know. Was JBL just running his mouth? Whatever. So Booker is the tweener here, really starting to turn. Pinned JBL, like we said. Josh had gotten involved, all that. I liked Booker's ring gear here. The black and yellow was kind of neat.
Very, very different, yes.
A lot of in-ring brawling to start. JBL goes right at Booker, fighting through the offense and laying in chops and right hands. Booker showing good energy and seems boosted up by this angle and turn. Booker catches fire, lands some kicks, and then clotheslines the champ to the floor. OJ's distraction allows JBL to turn the tide. The brawl spills into the announce table. OJ nails Booker on the floor. JBL takes over back inside using the million-dollar dream. JBL's aggressive in between sleepers, hammering elbows. Booker blocks JBL on the top rope and hits a nice superplex. Jordan jumps Booker on the floor again, but Booker fights him off and hits a bookend on JBL on the floor, which is a cool move. Hits a sidekick and scissors kick to OJ. Back inside, Booker hits a missile dropkick, leading to both men getting some offense in. Both are worn down. Booker gets a near fall. Crowd is quieted down quite a bit. OJ trips up Booker, leading to JBL DDT for an air fall. Ref bump allows OJ to come in and stomp Booker. He grabs a chair, but I thought it was a cool moment. Josh comes in and helps JBL helps Booker out, and then JBL just crushes him with a big boot and a brutal clothesline from hell. Booker hits a scissors kick, but OJ yanks the new ref out during the count. OJ gets in the ring again, brings in the belt, and JBL hits Booker with it for the win. I thought it was a very fun match, and like you were starting to say, OJ in the cabinet adds a ton to JBL's gimmick, because this is the type of champ he should have been. Desperate, interference. It fits perfectly, and it made the match work better than the past JBL stuff, because now he's not like... In the past, they had him booked as like a chicken shit, kind of. He'd run his mouth and then kind of, you know, hide. But here, he's more of a smart delegator. Like, he knows he has backup, so he can run his mouth and do what he wants because he's confident that Jordan will interfere constantly in his behalf to, you know, it's almost like the old Ric Flair model. Mm-hmm. Where he knew he constantly had the horsemen to back him up. Booker was game here. Lots of energy. I liked this match a lot. And I liked the structure of it and having... you know, having OJ in his corner to be able to constantly interfere added more excitement to what's normally been bland matches just because JBL's limited offense. So I think adding that excitement, adding the constant interference, he builds even more heat for JBL. I think it finally gets him kind of, you know, he's been stagnant as champ, and I think this gets him back in gear and moving along.
I agree 100% because I think it's getting to the point now. The crowd got a little flat in the middle, but I do think that this is the moment, my opinion, this is the moment where I think JBL's title reign takes a turn for the better. Not just for the addition of the cabinet, but I think just his overall presence. I think instead of being the lucky mid-card guy who somehow managed to become champion, he's finally acting like a main eventer. I think it was a little tough for him with Eddie and with Taker, but here... I feel like he's finally turned the corner and is comfortable in the main event role. And again, factions don't hurt, particularly in this case, because JBL is acting like Flair. And like you said, you got to have backup. Guys like that don't run alone. It makes no sense. The match was okay. You probably liked it a little more than I did. I thought it was a little boring in the middle, but it served its purpose. Clearly, Booker was just a kind of a layover opponent. But I think more than JBL specifically, SmackDown's just got a real lack of talent problem. Their most popular guys are mid-carders. And you need to give, you know... right now, who is the most popular guy on the show? Cena.
Yeah, and I mean Undertaker.
Right, but Taker's already blew through two matches.
Right.
And
Eddie's gone through his.
Right. And
Kurt's a heel.
We know Cena's going to have his moment, but you just got to have time. It's like somebody else on the other brand that we'll talk about in our next match. Just need time. You don't want to throw Cena out there when he's not ready.
No, and they were clearly just putting JBL over as many guys as they could to get him credibility. I mean, that's really what they were doing. Because they hotshotted the belt on him. And now he's beating Eddie, Taker, and Booker, and they're lining guys up left and right for him. So it was fine. It was a shrewd move. I thought turning Booker, he was going nowhere else as a heel. So if you can use him to help strengthen JBL and get it back on the face side, why not? I mean, why not do it? I don't see any downside to doing it.
So there you go. JBL retains the WWE Championship. And JR, we've had what, 5 title matches? 4. four title matches, no changes.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting for a main, for a big show.
Now we head backstage where Evolution is plotting, and we're starting to see some personality and aggression from Batista. He's starting to get over a little bit of an attitude. Triple H hopes that Edge and Snitsky get beaten down so they can't challenge, because what's going on, which we'll talk about, is the winning team gets to control Raw for a month, and he's hoping that Edge and Snitsky get so hurt that if they win, they won't be in shape to challenge. Mm-hmm. But the tease is that Batista, you know, Hunter just assumes Batista wouldn't do that to him, but Batista's starting to show he may want to crack at the gold, and he kind of confides that in Flair on the way out of the room, kind of says, well, you know, if I win, I might do that to him. So,
which brings us to our main event.
Time to play the game!
Just settle in on the couch. That's what I do during this.
Put my head back.
Sit back. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. I won't go. Up over there. This is philosophy.
I think I just went through two innings of the Met game during that.
Yeah, because they don't ever get a hit.
God, this is so frustrating.
All right, main event. Is that where we're at?
We are, yeah. So there we go. Control of Raw. And of course we have... So, of course, Team Evolution, sort of, World Heavyweight Champion, Triple H, Batista, Snitsky, and Edge, taking on Team Randy Orton. Orton, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, and Maven.
I don't know what Randy Orton's going to do. I got to go spend all night and all weekend with my new nephew.
Orton. So
what a mook that guy. I mean, we trucked up to his house on Memorial Day. I lugged my infant son, my, you know, antsy 3-year-old daughter, Roger Morissette's whole family, Andy Flanagan. We all trucked up to wherever godforsaken part of Connecticut he lives in. This asshole's going to be in Rhode Island this weekend. I mean, literally in the state. And, oh, we'll see if we can come by. Like, you know, what the fuck? Like, I know... He has got a new nephew that was born this week, so they're going to visit. The party is from 4:30 to like 1 in the morning.
I know, that's what I said. I said,
what is he going to do? Well, nurse the fucking baby at 10 in the...
Well, he said, I haven't seen him yet. Well, I know, but it's not like his sister's going to run off to Guam with him or something.
No, but even beyond that, I mean, it's a baby. You're going to stay all night? Are you going to like rock in the chair while it sleeps, so, like staring at it?
That's what I said. What
Are you gonna bring off the, gonna the pump?
Bust his hairy tit out and feed the thing? I mean, like, what is he doing? Like, what is the problem?
He's gonna pull the pump out.
It's not even that far of a ride. It's like, we're like 25 minutes from his sister's house. He can't come for like a couple hours. He says, yeah, we may come for a little bit. I will shit in the woods if he shows up tomorrow night. Without some stupid text. And then he gets off, oh, I'm not going to drink. Like, shut up, you pussy.
He's going to have his, what if he'll have his socks on again? His socks and sandals.
Ah, what a dipshit. Went over there and dealt with a freak show at his party.
Yes, there were a few.
After Taboo Tuesday, Eric Bischoff said he was tired of being abused and quickly left the arena, leaving the wrestlers to run the show. The faces began teaming up to battle Evolution as they had enough of the bullying on Raw, and Evolution had claimed they would run the show with Eric gone. On 10/25, Maven stepped up and defeated Batista clean. Before Evolution could beat him down, Benoit and Jericho made the save. Later that night, Ric Flair defeated Randy Orton with help from Triple H. Before they could leave the arena, the faces surrounded them for all exit points, trapping them in the ring. To end the show, Orton and his crew quickly wiped out Evolution. And the next week, Eric announced he'd be taking a month sabbatical from Raw following the pay-per-view, and that Jericho, Orton, Benoit, and Maven would battle Triple H, Batista, Edge, and Snitsky to determine who would run Raw in his absence. Later in the show, La Resistance defeated Benoit and Edge to regain their tag team titles. After Edge threw the match by distracting the ref and allowing La Res double teams, Edge then beat Benoit with the belt and left him bloodied. Heading into the pay-per-view, Orton got hot, pinning Batista twice in consecutive weeks, once at a six-man and once at a singles match. And on 11/8, Triple H brought Snitsky to the ring to welcome him to the team. Snitsky warned Triple H that he was not a team player and he was coming for the title after he had control of Raw. Edge told Hunter the same thing, leading to some serious dissension in the team heading into the pay-per-view. Everything would come to a head at the end of the show when all eight men got involved in a Benoit versus Edge match. So Edge's heel turn solidified. We got that. Snitsky in the main events, which was good because he was red hot at Taboo Tuesday. Benoit and Jericho have been kind of leading this coalition to get rid of Evolution. Orton hooked up with them after he got dumped. So I like the lines of delineation. Maven getting reinserted is kind of random since he's really done nothing. But it was fine. You know, why not? Give it a go. I had those really good build. Evolution's power just getting out of control, and we have stakes on the line in the sand. A lot of subtle work by Batista, like we said, starting to get antsy and interested in the belt, kind of bored with this being the muscle of the group. And Flair's kind of caught in the middle between his, you know, his lover and his
protege
son. doesn't know which way to go. Orton just pushes the leader of the anti-evolution movement. Pop for Benoit as he continues to sink a bit, but still well highlighted as a top guy here. Strong face team even with the disadvantage, 4-on-3. Edge's heel turns move along nicely. It's very much needed and a great fit, something that was desperately needed for him. Edge also has a new theme for his new direction. I meant to ask you, though, was that dubbed in? Did you check the DVD? You said he had it, right?
It was on the DVD, yeah.
Okay, so
it seemed very... It wasn't the one that you would know from him.
Right.
It seemed like it was kind of thrown together. I mean, it was Metalingus's, like, CD
actual version, yeah. So, new themes for a lot of the songs that we kind of grew to know, or debuting now around this time. So he's got the new theme for his new direction. Benoit and Edge with stiff strikes. Snitsky had good heel presence. I thought he fit in well enough here as the angry monster. Lots of tagging on both sides, letting everyone pair off and get offense in. Batista's confidence is growing. He looks like a beast. He manhandles Orton before tagging out. I thought it was cool to see Orton and Edge continue the rivalry on different sides now. Of course, they had feuded earlier in the year. Benoit unleashes German suplexes on the whole team, looking great, running through everyone. He hits Edge and Triple H with a diving headbutt at the same time. Gets a sharpshooter on Hunter, but Snitsky makes a save with a big right hand. Benoit then gets a crossface on Edge, but Batista makes a save, and Hunter gets the pedigree, and Edge covers him to eliminate. Benoit had a short run, eats the pedigree, and jobs there, but I thought he looked strong overall. I thought he got some good shine, which was nice to see. Batista and Snitsky have issues. They have a big stare down. Flair trips up Jericho and kills his momentum and gets thrown out by the referee. Batista wrecks Orton and Jericho with a double clothesline, which was really impressive. And you can kind of tell he's starting to develop the it factor. His presence in the ring, his charisma, the crowd's really starting to connect with him at a different level. You could tell that it's starting to all come together for him and that he has that, whatever, you know, whatever it takes to be a big star. Batista gets whacked with the title belt. Jericho covers him for the elimination. I thought it was a good cover to have Batista lose and job to a weapon. He didn't lose clean to anyone. He whacks Jericho with a clothesline on the way out. Match breaks down as Edge and Hunter work over Orton on the floor, leaving Jericho unable to make the tag. Maven shows up all bandaged and bloodied and tags in. He goes wild on Snitsky and Hunter. The crowd was flat for him. I thought that could have been a cool segment if it was someone they gave a shit about, but they didn't really care about Maven, so no one seemed to get into it. But I thought it could have been neat. Siski goes wild with the chair. He just crushes Maven and gets DQ'd, and then Hunter eliminates Maven easily afterwards. Edge eliminates Jericho with a spear, and no surprise at all that Orton's kind of the chosen one to be the last guy here. Hunter and Edge work him over. They double-team fluidly until a collision leads to a near-fall on Edge. Edge then spears Hunter by accident and walks into an RKO, and that brings the match to one-on-one. Crowd is really into it now after being quiet early on. Orton gets an RKO out of nowhere to block a pedigree for the win and a big celebration. Orton's a sole survivor for the second straight year. A good finish makes sense for the story to have Evolution against the Power for a while now. I'm glad they didn't just put Evolution in charge. I thought it was a fine Survivor match overall. Good spots blended in. The crowd was up and down, but a good finish for Orton, booked well. And I thought it was too bad that the crowd wasn't more behind him, because I thought they were actually doing an okay job building him as a top guy. The crowd just didn't seem to get on board. So what did you think of this whole shebang?
I did like that Triple H actually came in with Batista to Evolution music instead of having to come in by himself. I thought the pace of the match was fine, typical Survivor stuff. I think Orton was working his butt off, and I think the crowd should have given him a little more shine. Boy, Snitsky, forget back knee. Snitsky's got front knee, side knee, forehead knee. I mean, wow. Thank God there was no wellness policy. I think that Edge still kind of looks like a, not quite at the level of a full-blown heel. I know he's a full-blown heel, but I really,
because I thought he fit well here versus where he was earlier in the
year. Well, I think being in a team helped. Maybe changing the tights up. He still had, like, different colored tights. I don't know. I think you'll see more of him change up by 2005. So I'll give it. I'll hold back because it just happened. And, you know, I like Edge a lot. And I think he's finally getting comfortable now post-injury. So the jury's still out. We'll wait a couple more months. But I think he's going to be fine. Hate to say it. Match Miss Sean. Could have used another good work rate, good bumper, but obviously selling.
So what if they would have done, I mean, yeah, I get selling where he was really hurt.
Yeah.
But imagine if Maven gets wiped out and then Sean comes out.
That'd have been awesome.
Then the crowd would have went batshit.
Yeah.
That might have really bumped this match up even more.
Yeah. No, I agree. That would have been fantastic. But Kurt, that's what we saw on the screen a minute ago. Sean, obviously, the knee injury at Taboo Tuesday was legit, so he needed to take the show off. And obviously, we won't have a Raw pay-per-view for quite a number of weeks, so he'll be okay to rebound. I like the match. It was good. I wish the crowd was a little more juiced for Orton, but I thought it was a pretty cool end. I thought it was a cool end to have, you know, him RKO Edge and Triple H literally out of nowhere and get the win. Obviously, it was a way for Orton to get his shine back against Triple H without having the belt involved, so that was a big deal. That was probably the number one thing. But I had no issue with it. I was fine with it. It was a good ending. Crowd seemed a little pumped when the show ended. So I think they gave a little bit back to Orton at the end. But yeah, no, I had no problem with the show at all. It was a good way to end it. And I was looking forward to seeing the good guy inmates running the asylum and seeing how Evolution had to get put through their paces. So the result was right. The match was good. I think Orton could have used a little more shine, but he got a decent amount when the match ended. And yeah, I thought it was a good end of the show.
Yeah, I mean, not a blowaway match, but it was worked fine. I enjoyed it enough. I thought the stipulation was good. I liked the finish. And I thought it put a nice bookend on what ended up being a surprisingly decent show. Like, I always remember the show as being kind of boring and bland. But if you look up and down the card at what we talked about, a lot happened. Everyone worked hard. There was no real down spots on the show. There was no match of the year candidate. You know, nothing stood out.
Right.
So it prevents it from, like, you know, getting its, like, BB plus A status. But, you know, solid C plus B minus show, which is better than I always remembered it being. And I liked the JBL match and everything else was solid as well. And the Trish Lita stuff was really hot, too. So a much better show than you may remember. And we're hoping to finish 2004 in a decent stretch. We had a very good, pretty good Taboo Tuesday and a pretty, you know, decent Survivor Series. So we got one more show to go in 2004. We'll finally be in the books. And we'll talk a lot about how the year's changed in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. If you look at where they started, just how different things are, you know,
yeah.
Very different.
No, a different SmackDown does not look as juicy as it did Raw has gone through some paces. We've seen a lot of guys leave, both voluntarily and involuntary. But, yeah, I mean, I remember when the first couple times I watched the show, I did not like it. I thought it was really dull. But this last viewing woke me up. I thought the undercard was solid. I really enjoy the fact that Heidenreich and Undertaker pleasantly surprised me. I like the show a lot. It's not, you know, it's on an A+, but you might want to throw it in if, you know, you just want something on in the background. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised and entertained. So there it is.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. We got a big day tomorrow. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So Scott's going to drive here every other Monday. We're going to do this live.
Yes, exactly.
And then drive back after
the
show.
Drink a different beer. Yes.
No, so it's fun doing this in person. I get to see you manically doing your thing.
Yes.
A lot of fun. It was good. So,
release a load.
We'll be back in 2 weeks on the Monday. We'll be talking Armageddon 2004 as we wrap up the year. And I guess we'll watch the rest of the Mets game. Is that what we're going
to do? Good. Randy Man can.
Yeah, I don't want to watch it. So. I started the day with a handful of dog shit. And we're going to end the day watching this dog shit team.
We just talked about Rotella.
Yeah, with dog shit in the middle. The big dog shit sandwich this morning. today. All right, so we're out. Hopefully, when you hear this, hopefully we will have survived the weekend. No broken bones. No busted, you know, collarbones healing okay. Hopefully everyone has a good time. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. We'll be back next week. I'll be back next week, or this week, whenever you listen to this, I guess, later this week with Will for the Dangerous Alliance episode number 5. Week after, we've got Kevin Kelly main event, and then we'll go onward and upward from there. So, for my PIC, I am JT. We are out. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Goodbye. That's it?
Yeah, I didn't really know. I just saw Brandy Gilbert. One guy who had double digit.
What'd he do? Terry Roy? Ah!